Welcome to the RC3.
Welcome everybody to the Franconia NetStage. I have the great pleasure to introduce you to Leonie, who has been active in higher education politics since 2015 and, among other things, they have been representative in the European Students' Union and an executive committee member of the Free Association of Students' Unions, FZS for short. And I also may introduce you to Lasse, who currently studying in Leipzig and who's president to the ARCA Student Council and member of the FZS. Their talk goes by the name Let's Get Digital, How the EU Envisions the Future of European Education. This talk will introduce you to current trends in the European higher education policy with special attention to how digitization is used to further strategic goals to the EU Commission. I'm happy to give the floor to Leonie and Lasse.
Yes. Hello and welcome, everybody. We are Leonie and Lasse, and we want to talk to you about European education policy in the following minutes. And we want to tell you about what the next decade will have in pocket for European education policy, and have prepared a quite extensive agenda for you. We want to tell you first about where this is all coming from and what the fuck the European Commission is doing and why you should care about it, because those changes potentially have the potential to impact European education policy quite staunchly and also impact each and every university we know and the way we study and research. One of the core things in that will be the European University Initiative, which we will tell you in a few details. Afterwards, we will talk about mobility and social dimension. Leonie will talk through that. And then we will go into details of virtual exchanges and internationalization at home, and also micro-credentials, which is one of the biggest buzzwords buzzing around through European higher education policy right now. We will also tell you about the European Student Card Initiative before we will speculate about the European degree, which is talked about in at some places, but it's quite uncertain what is meant by that by now. And afterwards, we will conclude our speech. Thank you. So what is the European Commission doing right now? As you all know, the European Union has come under a lot of criticism recently, and the process of Europeanization has come to a steady decline, or it's gotten slower in the recent times. You know all the buzzwords. The Brexit is happening, and they will be definitely leaving, or have been leaving 2 years ago, and also will leave the common market and on the 1st of January in 2 days. But also the Fidesz party in Ukraine, in Hungary, or the Peace Party in Poland are blocking further further integration of Europe. But also on the international stage, Europe has come under some scrutiny, and so the European Commission and the European Council and the other institutions have come to the conclusion that further steps to integrate Europe even further are needed. And one of those could be, for example, the further integration of the markets, trying to enroll the euro onto other onto countries which currently don't use the euro as a currency. But also one of the core principles in which further integration is shall be advanced will be education. And so the euro... I'm sorry. All these principles have been lined out in a speech by Emmanuel Macron, which he gave on the 26th of September 2017. His words were actually quite drastic, and I just highlighted that he's been talking of a European civil war, but also of the other side of the Atlantic, and quite concisely described the problem from his perspective. It's surely also a reaction to his victory over Marine Le Pen in France. So he said that the European civil war is halting the integration and the internal divisions of Europe and the European Union have been a problem, and their further steps are desperately needed to get over that. He proposed a very broad array of things to overcome these internal divisions and to further integrate Europe. And one of the core things he mentioned was a culture under which Europe could be integrated. And it's very Eurocentric, all in all, what he said. But the speech he held at the Sorbonne, which accordingly was called the Sorbonne speech, had quite a big impact on the European Union and what will continue in the following years. Especially in the sector of higher education policy, because seemingly they diverge from the Bologna process and try to integrate things even further, but it's still quite behind the curtain of information, kind of. It's still not really breaching big publicity, I want to say. So when we look at the timeline, I just picked the date of the Brexit referendum as one of the things which happened in 2016, but you could also put in there the election of Donald Trump or other things, for example, the rise of China, which all seemed to have had a big impact on the thinking and the worldview of Emmanuel Macron and of the European Commission. So things have been picking up. And then on the 26th, as I told you, of September, Emmanuel Macron held the Sorbonne speech and mentioned for the first time the idea of creating European universities, which will be abbreviated in the future or in the coming speech of Leonie and me as EUI, meaning European University Initiative. On the 14th of November, the European Commission, published a communique strengthening European identity through education and culture, and laid out quite broad visions and showed that they picked up Macron's ideas and also mentioned for the first time the creation of a European education area, which Leonie will tell you about in a few seconds, in a few minutes. On the 22nd of May, the EU Council, the Education Committee of the EU Council, so the presidents of the countries, Angela Merkel, Emmanuel Macron, and all the other ones which were in power in 2018, and they combined the idea of the European University Initiative and the European Education Area, and decided that they want to have the European University Initiative as a flagship of the European Education Area. This developed quite rapidly into the first call for European universities. which ended on the 28th of February 2019, and 17 European University Alliances were selected under the European University Initiative. Another call ended this year, and there have been in total 41 European University Alliances selected. The German Ministry of Education had had a quite big impact on this whole process, which, as you can see, is a very, very rapid one for European policy in comparison. And they said they were staunchly in favor of creating a European education area. They were very, very supportive of the European University Initiative, and also set and followed through with the giving money from the German government directly to the European University Alliances. Most European universities alliances which have German universities in it receive money from the federal government as of now, and that money is handled through the DAAD, the German Academic Exchange Agency. And So the whole process was very, very much furthered by the German government, and in the back documents from the 70s or from the last century, there often has been an idea of creating European universities, mostly from German side, and it has been shot down quite a lot in the last century. So from the French side, so that. That's quite a divergent from the back from former times, and the hope of integrating Europe further by means of education. So now, Leonie will tell you about.
Yes. Also, I want to encourage you, if you have any questions about abbreviations that we use or the terms, feel free to ask, because we know that the whole thing is very cryptic for people who are not spending a lot of their time reading these texts and talking about these concepts. So feel free. And there are a lot of abbreviations going around, and they are confusing. So there is the European Education Area, or the EEA, which is this quote that I have here is taken from the Gutenberg text from 2017 in November. Establish a European education area based on trust, mutual recognition, cooperation, exchange of best practices, mobility and growth. And when this paper was published, a lot of people who are involved in European higher education policy were really surprised, because we already have a European higher education area, or an EHEA, since 1999. It was established with the Bologna Declaration. And interestingly, the basis for the Bologna Declaration was the Sorbonne Declaration, which was done a year before. So more or less saying we need a more new Sorbonne process for Europeanization would be, and many people have seen it like saying, well, the European higher education area, which was is also called the Bologna process, has failed in a way to create an area built on trust, mutual recognition. So what is the goal of the European higher education area? It is a collaboration between 49 countries who want to build an area implementing a common set of commitments through structural reforms and shared tools. As you might know, the EU has 27 member states, and the European higher education area has 49. So there is much more difference between those. And in this talk, we will not go into the whole impact that the Bologna process had on higher education in Europe at large, but we will mostly talk about the impact that the European education area has, and in what way it creates a Europe of two speeds, in a way. Like a Europe in the European education area, where there's a lot of money spent for the different initiatives, which we are going to talk about, and the different programs, and the European higher education area, which has been trying for more than 20 years now to build the same thing, more or less. But the difference of the European education area, what the EU Commission is going to say, we are not trying to do something different, because they are also want to implement mutual recognition in the field of vocational training and also schools. So that is like a huge difference. The European higher education area is for universities of applied sciences, and the aim of the European education area is to address all kind of credentials education that is happening in the EU. But there is also a lot of worry that the other European countries, which are not members of the EU, might be left behind. And maybe Lasse can also address some of these concerns and when he talks more about the European University Initiative.
University Initiative, as you have learned, is seen as the flagship of the European education area and shall be new. As I've told you already, it consists of 41 alliances with up to 10 member universities. So the idea is that universities in different places in Europe get together and create a European University Alliance. In the introduction, for which I unfortunately forgot to thank you all, it was mentioned that I'm president of the Arcus Student Council. I'm sure nobody really knows what that means of you, or most of you, if there is no lucky coincidence. It means Arcus is one of those European University Alliances. It consists of 7 universities from 7 countries, and it has created an internal structure and also some form of a student council, which we are still in the process of creating, but we try to represent student interests through the student council, which I'm president of. In total, those numbers add up, and there are 280 higher education institutions involved in the European University Initiative in different alliances, and all of them get 5 million, every single alliance gets 5 million euro from Erasmus Plus budget, which probably will continue in the next EU budget, as far as I know, and also has got the opportunity to use 2 million euro from the Horizon 2020 budget per alliance. And those 5 million euros are for a term of 3 years for the first call. And there are universities from all member states, plus Iceland, Norway, Serbia, Turkey, and the United Kingdom. I will tell you about the two-speed part in a second when I am going to get to my maps, but first let's return to Emmanuel Macron's Sorbonne speech, where he again outlines what he thought and where the European universities are first mentioned. Because in the speech, the goals of Emmanuel Macron are for higher education area extremely ambitious, and I believe he didn't have the intention of fulfilling these goals, because nobody can in the short term. So in 5 years from 2019, where the initiative started, to 2024, there should exist 20 alliances or European universities. We don't know if there's a difference in his mind between European universities and European University Alliances, but the central goal is highlighted that all students of these European universities shall be mobile between those universities. In the first call, the goal set by the European Commission was that 50% of students enrolled in an alliance shall be mobile, shall participate in mobility between the universities. That means that in Arcus, where I'm again president of the student council, we have 320,000 students between those 7 universities. That would mean that 160,000 students would participate in mobility during their study programs, which is extremely ambitious, considering that Erasmus has some numbers between 10 and 20% usually. But let's look at how the universities are distributed throughout Europe and to look at how the different speeds are impacted, which we can see here a map where the universities participating in the European University Initiative are counted up by a country. Germany, for example, has got 35 universities participating in the European University Initiative, and the smallest number are Malta and Luxembourg, with both one. As you can see, you can't see Malta. But that's because it's so small, and I will just tell you what's happening in Malta. Iceland also has got just one, and you can probably get what the numbers mean. What's most interesting here is Turkey, Serbia, and the United Kingdom, because the United Kingdom has only 7 universities participating in the European University Initiative, but it has got similar inhabitants as France, for example. So France, with 32 universities, is just second in Europe, and also Serbia and Turkey have got universities, but the two speeds is quite different, because under the European higher education area, also Ukraine and White Russia and Israel and Russia are included, and under the European education area, it's mostly just the core of Europe plus Iceland, Liechtenstein, and Norway, because Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway are participating in the initiative as they would be a normal European member. But Brexit has had its impact, and Britain is just on the sideline of this initiative, which they are not in the European higher education area, e.g. the Sorbonne and the Bologna process. They are normal part of the Bologna process, but not of the Sorbonne process, apparently. We can also see the the regional distribution of everything, and how many European University Initiative universities exist per student. So the normal number is between 50,000 and 100,000 students per university, which is surprisingly good. When we compare it with, for example, the Excellence Initiative in Germany, which the ratio has been way worse for the students, and considering that students shall be involved, it's quite good. But it also tells us something about the regional distribution. And the most interesting finding here is that Poland is way underrepresented. They have got about 50,000 students more than the next closer one, which would be Greece. And the third bad worst represented country in the European University Initiative is actually Germany, even though they've got the most, which is because they've got the most students. As you can see, the United Kingdom, Serbia, and Turkey are not included in this graphic, because they would very badly distort the relations. On the lower end, the best relations go to Malta and Luxembourg, which is basically just because they just got one university and not that many students, and also Iceland. And one can only speculate whether things have political reasons for these distributions. I'm more than certain that Iceland, Malta, and Luxembourg are represented for more or less political reasons, but whether Poland is being so badly represented is just up for speculation. I think it could be something with have something to do with the authoritarian government in Poland, but I'm not that good in Polish EU relations to make a better guess than that. Why Germany is on the third place is probably because Germany has got the reputation in the process of the European University Initiative to be the most eager to involve it. And from my experience working inside the area, Germany is and the German universities in the initiative are pushing the hardest for further integration, and also which is completely unrelated to whether students are pushing for it or researchers are pushing for it or the leadership of the universities is pushing for it, because on all these three areas, the German involved, the persons involved from Germany are pushing, from my experience, the hardest, which is in of itself a big problem and can become even worse. And now I will hand over to Leonie again.
Thank you, Lasse. Thank you, Lasse. So I'm going to walk you through some concepts and projects which are important if we are talking about European education policy and things that are like, because we have to understand that the European University Alliances are more or less an experimental field for the different projects that the EU Commission is doing to further European integration. So in each of the projects or concepts could feel a whole lecture. So I will be very quick about it. And if you have any questions, just pose them through the channels. So what is mobility in the context of European education policy? So according to the European Commission, the European ministers have agreed to double the proportion of students in higher education completing a study or training period abroad to 20% by 2020. Support for mobility remains a core focus of the Erasmus Plus program. So mobility for students is defined as either spending a study period of 3 to 12 months abroad, which must be part of the student study program, or having a traineeship or work placement abroad in enterprise for 2 to 12 months. And this should be wherever possible integrated of the student study program. And it might not be surprising to you that those ambitious mobility quotas are very hard to fill, not only because we at the moment have a pandemic, which more or less doesn't let people study abroad physically, but also because of the social dimension. So what is meant by the social dimension? More or less, it describes all the circumstances that an individual student faces, like ability, social and economic background, which might impact his or her or their ability to go abroad or finish their studies. So if the European higher education area wishes to address the social dimension, they have to create equal opportunities in higher education in terms of access, participation, and successful completion of studies, studying and living conditions, guidance and counseling, financial support, and student participation in higher education governance. So what this means for mobility is that there has to be a portability of financial support. So if I'm getting disability benefits in Germany, that I can also take them to another country where I'm studying, and removing barriers, providing incentives. So if I want to have more mobile students, I also need to address the social dimension, because there are barriers which not every student can overcome. And one of the biggest barriers to going abroad is the financial situation of the students, but also ability or care responsibilities. And so this brings me to, let's say, something that shouldn't be a solution to the problem, but is used in some cases as a solution to the problem that mobility quotas cannot be achieved. So virtual exchange and internationalization at home are buzzwords that are thrown around about this, and I would call them mobility. So I could make a whole talk on both of these concepts, because the problem is that they are used by different people to further different agendas. But generally, you can say virtual exchange and internationalization at home both describe international experiences with which students can make without going abroad. So this might be digitally or not digitally, actually, because internationalization at home modules that I have seen have also, for example, had the requirement of students to work in an enterprise or organization where the working language is English to have their international experience. And the important thing that I want you to take away from that is behind virtual exchange and internationalization at home, this is not mobility, how it is defined and how student representatives are demanding it to have. And most people who know what they're talking about would also never suggest to describe these offers as mobility. For example, the German Academic Exchange Service, the AAD, is doing a lot of research and best practice gathering on virtual exchange. And they always say this is not mobility, but there have been pushes by institutions, higher education institutions, to soften the borders between mobility and virtual mobility in order to hit mobility quotas and save money. Because if you want to send more students from your institution abroad, it costs you money in counseling, and you will have to get the funding for them. And so, and oftentimes, as you might know, higher education institutions don't have a lot of that. But the EUAs, the European University Alliances, are using the concept of virtual mobility to hit the mobility quotas, because as you heard before, Macron wants all students who are part of a European University Alliance to have some sort of international experience, mobility. So it pushes the member institutions of these alliances to, in a way, try to redefine what it means, like shorter periods that are not 3 to 12 months, for example, or just counting digital forms of digital exchange as mobility. So another thing that the European University Alliances are a testing field for, and it's going to haunt us in the future, is micro-credentials. This definition that I have here is from the European Commission. A micro-credential is a proof of the learning outcomes that a learner has acquired following a short, transparently assessed learning experience. They are awarded upon the completion of short standalone courses or modules done on-site or online or in a blended format. So micro-credentials originated from massive open online courses, MOOCs. And for some reason, the European Commission has decided that micro-credentials make education more inclusive, is accessible. A larger uptake of micro-credentials could foster educational and economic innovation and contribute to a sustainable post-pandemic recovery. Micro-credentials can be provided by higher and vocational education and training institutions, as well as by different types of private entities. So there is also like the aspect of people earning money by offering those courses, and like big enterprises. There is also, like, if you might know that there are micro degrees, micro credentials already offered by Amazon and Google. Micro credentials, as shown in the other three bullet points, are really, really pushed by the European Commission right now. They are a flagship action of the European Skills Agenda. They're included in the September communication on achieving the European education area by 2025, and also included in the Digital Education Action Plan. So, and it's really emphasized that higher education should have a larger role in supporting lifelong learning and reaching out to a more diverse group of learners. And this sounds awesome, right? But the problem is that there is no evidence that micro-credentials boost innovation and inclusivity, and higher education institutions are set up as competitors to other providers of professional development offers, like vocational schools, Volkshochschulen, if you might know them here in Germany. Another problem is that the European Commission seems to have a very one-sided perspective on lifelong learning. So they really focus on self-optimization and anticipating the needs of the labor market, professional development. Another issue which is not addressed is who's going to pay for it? Because, of course, developing these modules, these courses, is going to cost money to the for the higher education institutions. And I have been part of working on the recommendation of the German Rectors Conference on micro degrees and badges. And not everything that's written in there I do support. And one thing that's written in there that to have cost neutrality for the higher education institutions of micro credentials, they might ask the students to pay a fee for it. And last but not least, cui bono. So who's really profiting from micro credentials? Are it the learners or is it the employers who don't have to pay for the professional development of their employees? And I think that it's really not the learners who are benefiting if more universities are doing this, but maybe this is something we can discuss in the end. So another thing which is going to make our whole learning experience in the EU better, faster and stronger is the European Student Card Initiative. So as it is written in the communique from Gothenburg that we are mentioning again and again, to support this initiative on mutual recognition, develop and launch a secure electronic system for the storage and retrieval of academic diplomas to facilitate verification of authenticity. So the goal is to have full deployment of the European Student Card during 2021. Very excited to see that. So the aim is that the European Student Card Initiative will enable every student to easily and safely identify and register themselves electronically at higher education institutions within Europe when moving abroad for studies, eliminating the need to complete on-site registration procedures and paperwork. So the EU Commission has been implementing the Erasmus Without Paper network to achieve this. And every institution who's part of Erasmus will be obliged to manage online learning agreements by 2021, manage inter-institutional agreements by 2022, and by 2023 to exchange student nominations and acceptances of transcripts of records. Also, the participating institutions will need to promote the use of the Erasmus Plus mobile app. And by 2025, all students in Europe should be able to enjoy the benefits of the European Student Card Initiative. But where is the card? Is what I'm asking, because at the moment we only have an app. And supposedly in 2021 it will be. But there is more. The European Student Card can do everything. It is supposed to give students the chance to access online courses and services provided at other higher education institutions. And over time, it shall allow students to enjoy cultural activities throughout Europe at discounted prices. It should also be linked to EU's electronic identification rules to authenticate students. So it might be connected to the electronic identification that you are using in your passport, for example. I leave it to your imagination what kind of data protection issues might come up with that, but supposedly it will make everything great again. So Lasse, would you like to tell us something about your experiences talking about this? All right. So, okay, I will go on. So to come to the more speculative part of our talk, I have to charge my laptop. Wait a moment. Technical break. So we're going taking you into the unknown of the European degree. So one of the aims of the European Commission, which is talked about a bit more behind the scenes because it's like more or less a very controversial point, is creating world-class European universities that can work seamlessly together across borders. There will be mutual recognition of higher education and a convergence of grades, matriculation numbers, and study programs. So as you can see a bit, like the matriculation numbers, convergence might work about the European student card. And I think here we see also like the big difference between the EHEA and the EEA, because the EHEA is really focused on having the different the differences of organization and structures, leaving them intact in the different countries. But if we want to converge all these things, we will need to have our structures be more similar in the future. So one thing that might be a benefit of it is that higher education institutions might be more autonomous from their national governments. There might be easier mobility of researchers and students, and there might student unions all over Europe might be more empowered by it. But there are also threats and problems, like the elimination of democracy in higher education institutions, because there are going to be complex multi-level governance structures. You see, like on the, here in Germany, you can see it either like on the federal level, there's legislation on a national level, and there's also going to be EU legislation to consider. And Lasse, would you like to continue?
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry for the technical difficulties. So the coughing, one problem which could threat everything is the stronger top-down approach towards everybody, which gets kind of like obstructed by the complex multi-level governance structures. Because when we converge with all these concepts like grades and study programs on a European level, it gets way more difficult for singular student actors or researchers to influence the structure of everything. So when the study programs are converged throughout Europe, the Fachschaftsrat or the Faculty Student Council will have problems to bring forward their position because they have to also consider 7 or 6 other faculty student councils. Also, the same problem as with the Excellence Initiative in Germany can emerge, which would build the free class system of higher education institutions. Of basically universities of applied sciences, standard universities and European universities. Even though all the universities of applied sciences and the standard universities are trying to position themselves as being equal, and still in many places the right to give PhDs to researchers lies with the standard universities. And also, as you have seen, the risk is that there's no face-to-face teaching or way less, and that has got problems in of itself, but also some benefits, but maybe there are other places to discuss the benefits. Because the time is quite limited, we have to continue with our conclusion. More than the picture of conclusion. Thank you. Oh, that's Leonie's part. I'm sorry. Leonie, please.
All right. So digitization is used as a tool to further European integration, like by introducing the student e-card, virtual exchange possibilities, and micro-credentials, which are really tied to digital ways of transferring grades and having grades recognized. But the measures create and uphold a Europe of two speeds. The digital solutions are seen as a cheaper way to hit mobility quotas and social dimension goals instead of addressing those problems in a real way. Also, the impact of the tools and structures which are being put in place is not reflected upon sufficiently, because looking at each of the initiatives, projects themselves, I also have a lot of reservations about them, which are not addressed. And without significant engagement by those affected by these policies, there is a real danger of being excluded from decision-making processes. So it is very important to ensure democratic student involvement and the possibility of bottom-up approaches. And I would also really suggest to the EU Commission to think about involving some privacy specialists before they are like doing things, because I'm really worried. And now, 5 minutes after time, we would like to conclude our talk and thank you all kindly for your attention and would be open for your questions now.
So thank you so much for this very in-depth talk. It was super, super informative and very, very interesting. And for now, unfortunately, there are no questions yet, but I think they will come up soon when we processed all this input for now. So
yes, I'm also sorry that we were so fast on some things, but it's really hard to know what to not mention in a way.
That's super, super okay. I would like to invite both of you, if you can spare the time, to our IRC chat if there are questions coming up for now. Or do you want to mention anything, further information that you can spend with us?
I could tell you about how Corona. Yeah, I can tell you about how Corona impacted everything, because there has been a quite big impact by now, which is the current thing. And I think I dropped it out of the European University initiatives.
Oh,
but we all know that the time frame Macron laid out is completely blown away by the pandemic. Most the European University initiatives started to work in November of 2019, and most European University alliances haven't had the opportunity to meet before the pandemic started. The one I'm in, for example, planned on having a meeting on the 11th of March, and by then the Italian faction from Padua was on complete lockdown and couldn't leave Italy, so everything was blocked. And so The big tip from me is, if you want to do some mobility and you know that your university is a European, part of the European University Alliance, now is the perfect time to apply for funds, because there is a lot of money lying unused around, and you can easily go to one of the places, because everybody wants you to be mobile. So there can be some special deals, and you just need to ask around in your local institutions where you can apply for these grants. And also the whole time frame is kind of gone away, and we will see how that turns out in the future, but no goal will be achieved by 2024. That's kind of certain as of now.
Well, time will come, I guess.
Well, I mean, they also wanted to be finished with the Bologna process in 2009, and well,
yeah, okay.
Still going.
I see.
So if there are no questions, I can also talk a bit more about something that worries me about the European student card.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm just going to go back. So because if we are thinking about the plans for this and think it to an end, of course, it would mean that there would be a European student ID, and it would make it possible to track students across borders in a way with all the information connected. And it's like really hard to know what kind of data protection is in place about that. So, and if it's also connected to electronic passports, so there are a lot of stuff that is a bit worrying about it. But also what is more worrying is something that Lasse and I talked about, is that we kind of feel that the European Commission might not know how universities, higher education institutions actually work. And maybe Lasse, you might want to add something about like the communication issues you are facing inside of the European University Alliances.
Yes, thank you. Exactly. So the problem is that not only the European Commission knows how European higher education institutions work right now, but apparently nobody knows how other European higher education institutions work. It goes so far that when we in our student council talk about our structures, we don't have words to speak together. And that's not because we are bad at talking English, but because the structures are quite different, and all these linguistic connotations get faded away. For example, we are the Leipzig Student Union in German is called Studentenrat, so Student Council, but it was built on kind of like an post-socialistic view after the fall of the GDR, because it was founded on the 9th of November of 1989. So the connotation that it has something to do with like some council democracy gets completely lost. But we also don't know how the structures in Spain are exactly working, because it's very hard to translate Fachschaftsrat into Spanish. And and I think that says a lot. And I mean, we even have problems talking to our Austrian colleagues in German about our institution, because even there they are difficult and different. And so we need new words, and we need multilingual lexicons, building a common understanding before we can even move further. And even by creating this common language, we are deeply converging everything. And because the structures get similar, and the views get similar, and the student councils influence each other in ways we haven't had thought possible, probably. So that's very, very interesting, and it will become difficult. And what that means for the student card initiative is that the ticket, how to use the transport and mobility in Germany, which is quite common, where you pay a fee of 180 euros or something in that bracket and can use the public transportation in your city or your Bundesland in your country. It's difficult to tell that to the European Commission, because Germany is kind of the only place where that exists, and then they want to have like one common culture offer for all students throughout Europe. But then what happens to the University of Münster, where they have a culture ticket where you can use your student card to visit the museums and the libraries and the theaters for free, just because you've got your student card? How will you include that in the student card, which will be distributed all over Europe? So, because then the local institutions like the theaters and the museums will say like, no way, we're gonna make it free for every student in Europe to use it if we are the only place doing so. And so the Commission is getting into probably quite deep problems with some of the initiatives, because there are some implications of them which are going deep into the fabric of what has been created around higher education institutions throughout the countries, which is also different from country to country.
Very true.
So different that we can't even really speak about it.
So yeah, language barrier and further difficulties. But I think they will get solved, I hope.
Well, what do you think, Nina? Would you use a European student card? Do you think it's useful to you?
I think it would be useful. I mean, I'm actually studying English, so for me, going abroad would be, of course, great. And I think, I mean, yeah. Yeah, of course you would use it. Maybe more in the beginning than later. But as you said, like museums, etc. that would be so useful for everybody, actually. And they would just really not just use it, but I'm lacking the words. I'm sorry.
No problem. I think
it would be so convenient for everybody, for every student.
I'm just seeing a question in the IRC.
Are there any plans to educate students in addition to the subject content, or to encourage them to study more than just their subject?
Mm-hmm. What would you think, Lasse? Is there some intention of broadening the curricula?
I actually think it's kind of like one of the few possible benefits of the of the micro credentials. It will lead to the creation of weird subjects, and it's a very, very difficult question because it's so broad and we don't know how it will develop. But for example, my sociology institute in Leipzig is quite strict in what they teach and so on. And the participation of the University of Leipzig in the European University Alliance will broaden the sociology subjects at hand for me. Not for me, because I'm nearly finished with my studies, but you can use the sociology department of Bergen and without many hurdles, because all hurdles shall be all walls must fall between the student study programs is kind of the official policy right now.
I see.
Which we will see how that turns out. But some broadening will happen, but I don't see that the study programs get truly liberated. So you start at the university with like a blank study program and can just pick what you want.
I see. Yeah.
I think.
So we're running a little bit out of time right now. I'm really sorry to cut you off. I would really invite you again to the chat, so if there are any further questions that might go there directly to you. So thank you again for this very, very informative talk. I will rewatch it.
Yes, and I mean people can also reach out to us on however they want. I mean I'm on Twitter. I'm Lemon Green Bird, if you want to find me, and you can just ask me questions about micro credentials, for example, which could feel like a whole talk, me talking about it.
Yeah.
And I think also Lasse will be very happy to answer any questions you have about European University Alliances. And we are always looking for more people interested, because we think it's important that people with a lot of different perspectives look on this issue, and not only like those few people who are experts on that.
So thank you again. Have fun on the last day, and stay healthy, and we see you another time. Goodbye.
RC3.